Today's Journey to Wellness in Indian Country is made possible by the University of Minnesota Medical School Duluth Campus, educating medical students dedicated to serving rural Minnesota and American Indian, Alaska Native communities. Joining us on the phone this morning is Jen Davey. She is with ACO, and she's the house manager for their domestic violence shelter. Hey, Jen, good morning. Nice to have you with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So the Michelle LeBeau, the executive director of ACO, put out a Facebook post last weekend, and she was concerned about a couple of things. Obviously, things have changed a lot in a week. It seems as though things are not the same at the end of the day as they are at the beginning of the day for the last week or so.
But exactly.
She was really concerned about a few things with her folks there at ACO, and one of them had to do with being concerned, as we mentioned, with this panic buying of resources and stuff, and they were concerned about being able, you folks were concerned about being able to get the food and supplies and things that you needed for folks in your shelter. Talk about that just a little bit.
Well, I think what it was is in the beginning, initially, you know, we did a power buy where we went out when things first started happening and bought a lot of groceries and stocked up as much as we could, you know, and then we've kind of had the house on semi-lockdown to try to keep anything from coming in or out of there, and then following all of our protocols to keep the house sanitized and everything. So we've really tried to limit what's coming in and out, and then having ourselves stocked up. But what we're finding now and since then, you know, with all the panic buying, that there's limited resources out there for us. And we have, you know, people in the house more, you know, so there's more food being eaten, more things being used, more resources being used up at the time. So it's just in a circle of, you know, having a lack of resources, I guess.
Yeah, running out of stuff and having people consuming stuff more quickly than they would normally, because, of course, the kids are at home, and even though the school district is making some lunches available, you know, kids are home, people are home, and they're eating more meals and needing some of those resources. One of the other things that I found very disturbing, and this is a reality that you folks live with, of course, day in and day out, it's not a surprise to you. First of all, you have... your domestic violence shelter is always full. You are always needing to turn people away. But stress, and now if, you know, people are losing jobs, getting laid off, stress is a contributing factor to domestic violence. And what can you folks do about that situation when you're full to capacity already?
Well, what we've been trying to do is just be really vigilant about seeing there's a day one program where that we can go on our computers and see all the shelters around the state, see what shelters do have space, and then providing other resources locally, you know, what we can provide. But, yeah, all the shelters have been very full, including ours, and it's a problem, you know. So women who are experiencing some domestic violence in their homes are not having as many resources as they maybe would have originally before all this came out.
One of the things that I found particularly heartbreaking was a need in the schools to talk to kids about how to be safe at home when maybe for them home is not a safe place. Are those the kinds of conversations? Obviously, when folks are in your shelter, the idea is that is a safe place and they are okay there, even when they're not in school. But is that the kind of thing that you have to have conversations with kids about on an ongoing basis?
We have conversations with that with the kids and with the moms, and how, you know, conversations with the moms on how they can talk with their kids and keeping them safe. We do safety planning with the moms and the kids, so they can, you know who to call, where to go, in cases, you know, if there are situations where they're in that are extremely dangerous. We also, you know, plan out code words with them and have a safe person that they can contact and who to give that code word to let them know that they do need safety. And we also, you know, teach kids how to, you know, call 911 if they need to, and then also developing relationships with our DPD here locally so they are comfortable with that.
It must be heartbreaking for you.
It is. Yeah. Some days are real hard, but there's always, you know, rewards. There's rewards, too, that, you know, let you know that you're doing the right thing. And there's always, we always need that somebody, people out there doing the help, doing the work.
Now, the other thing is, obviously, when you're doing work like this, you can't really phone it in from home. It's very difficult to provide hands-on services to folks in crisis, you know, over the phone. So you have to be there. Is that, and of course, that I'm sure is creating a certain measure of challenge for the staff as well.
Yeah, we've had to reduce our staff. Had a few layoffs and then had to just keep the essential people there down to one person who's on staff at a time instead of having multiple people, just because, you know, community things have been shut down due to the virus, so we don't have as much of a need for some of our staff doing outreach work because we can't do it, So we just have the essential staff on. We have our 24-hour crisis line always open. We do have a police bed always open for if DPD needs to contact us for a bed for a woman until we're full to capacity. And then doing what we can as far as, you know, just communicating over the phone, directing people to resources that we know that are still open, and then just communicating with people.
You know, I think often about the, you know, they frequently talk about the 1915 pandemic, and I think about how lucky we are in the sense that we can get accurate information, we can communicate with one another up to the minute in real time instead of, you know, maybe having to wait days or a week or so before the newest information can be made possible to people. And so that is really a great blessing. How, as inconvenient and jarring as it is, it could be so much worse in terms of making sure that people have the right information and that they can reach out and ask for help if they need it. And yet, it still obviously is a challenge. Something else that ACO continues to do is incorporate cultural practices in dealing with the folks that you serve and keeping the spiritual needs of your entire community kind of at the forefront. The folks that work there, the folks that you're working with, and the community at large. Is there wisdom there being tapped into that the community at large could use, do you think, right now?
Well, I think what we're doing is just trying to keep, you know, our in-house programs running and practicing our cultural beliefs as we already have been doing in the house. We're smudging and cooking our indigenous food, doing what we can to keep our spirits going. I think what we need from the community is to know that, either from the county and the city, is to know that there's a plan, you know, so that how long is this going to last? And if it is going to be an extended amount of time, what's the long-term plan for everybody? I think what it is there's a lot of people that are really nervous about, you know, receiving some of the services. Like, for example, we have women who are in the shelter right now that we're expecting to get housing at the end of the month. But some of those contacts have been, they're not there because they're not at work because of things being closed down. So it's difficult to maintain, you know, this moving forward process.
Right.
So we have women who were excited and expecting things to happen, and now everything's so unsure. So I think what our groups would like to have is some kind of confirmation of what does this look like? What is the plan? And I know that's really difficult for some people to answer. Like, there is, like, nobody knows for sure answers on that. But I think it would be helpful to have some kind of information relayed regarding, like, this is what we're going to do if this happens, you know?
Right.
So, and then just we can reassure people that things are going to, you know, get better.
as human beings, we are just absolutely lousy at uncertainty. It really is very, very difficult for us as incidentally, the St. Louis County Board is holding a meeting this morning, and it starts in about 15 minutes. So St. Louis County will be having some new information, no doubt, coming out of that meeting. We don't know what that's going to be yet, of course, but there is that meeting coming up this morning, and so there will be some additional information coming out of that meeting. Jen, what can the community do right now for the people that you serve? Would donations of food and household goods or fill-in-the-blank be useful? Financial contributions, are they useful? People that are healthy and that can volunteer, would that be a useful thing? What do you need from us?
I think volunteers aren't, I mean, as much as we do appreciate volunteers, I don't know that that's a good idea right now, just because we kind of want to limit any external contact from any contagions or anything going on. But it is appreciated normally. I think any financial donations, any food, any household products that anybody has extra of. I know this is, you know, everybody's kind of running things on a tight ship. So any of that would be, you know, more than welcome. We're serving over 70 families, 3 meals a day, and trying to keep things as positive and healthy as possible. So any of that that can be donated can be brought to our 202 West 2nd Street address. And it would be much appreciated.
All right. And we'll get up a link also, so it'll be easy for folks to figure out how to get in touch, and if they have donations and they want to just double check anything. Jen, thank you so very, very much for joining us this morning. It was great
Thanks
to have
for
you.
Having us. Thank you.
Jen Davey is the house manager for ACO's Domestic Violence Shelter. And, of course, they are filled to capacity right now. And they've got a lot more folks staying at home, consuming household products and consuming food. And, as I mentioned, we'll get a link set up on our website, so it'll be easy for you to figure out how to help if that's something you think you can do. Today's Journey to Wellness in Indian Country is made possible by the University of Minnesota Medical School Duluth Campus, a national leader in improving health care access and outcomes in rural Minnesota and American Indian, Alaska Native communities.